few people that are going to be straggling in. Representative Starr is excused. He's on an official assignment. And Representative March is in the audience, and he'll be coming forth here in just a moment. I'd like to let everyone know we're going to reverse the order here today. We're going to begin with H.J.R. 24. We're going to do a bill introduction after that and then move to House Bill 2436. We anticipate our first couple of actions here to go rather quickly. So with that said, we'll open a public hearing on H.J.R. 24. Representatives March and Witt, please. Good afternoon, gentlemen. If you'd state your names for the record, please.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Steve March. I represent House District 15 in the center of Portland.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bill Witt, House District 7.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you being here. And would you tell us a bit about H.J.R. 24, please?
Well, thank you, Chair Wilson, members of the committee. I appreciate your support for House Joint Resolution 24 relating to National Marrow Donor Program and National Donor Day, which is February 10th, 2001. This matter came to us by my intern, Carissa Lamore, at Portland State University. There, a student by the name of Awana Miller, a constituent of Representative Witt's, is fighting for her life because she has not been able to find a perfect marrow match. As the information we have provided to you points out, and you undoubtedly know, bone marrow donations can be lifesavers for people with leukemia and other life-threatening diseases. Chances of rejection are greatly reduced with a perfect match, and matches are more likely to occur with family members. However, as in many 70% of the cases, a match cannot be found within the family. In lieu of family, people of similar ancestry or race are the most likely to produce a match. And because fewer minorities are in the population, it is even harder to find matches. That's why we are encouraging all Oregonians, but particularly persons of color, to participate in National Donor Day. And people can contact Drew Ross of the American Red Cross for more information regarding the future of bone marrow donor drives, which will be occurring. And that number is 503-284-0011, extension 234. And thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you, Representative March. Representative Witt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm pleased to sponsor this resolution with Representative March. I think this is an opportunity for the legislature and specifically the House to take note of the serious problem that exists in terms of health care in the United States as it relates to the National Marrow Donor Program. Specifically, of course, I'm concerned about the constituent I have who suffers from leukemia, who has not been able to find a suitable match. And when we note that we have more than 30,000 people in the United States diagnosed with these types of diseases, where this information would be critical in terms of helping these people find an appropriate match and a cure from their condition, I think it's most appropriate that the legislature take this opportunity to make this program, make Oregonians more aware of this program, to provide the opportunity for more Oregonians and more Americans to lead healthy, productive lives. Personally, I'm going to get involved in this and make sure that my information is on file, and I would encourage all members of the legislature, but most importantly, I think, to make Oregonians aware of this program and the need for people to participate in this program. So I would certainly urge the committee's support for this resolution.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions? Right, gentlemen, thank you very much. Appreciate that. All right. Do not have the sign-up list. Is there anyone else here to testify on this bill? All right. I suppose not. We will close the public hearing and we'll open a work session on H.J.R. 24. Again, the bill states, encourages Oregonians, especially persons of color, to participate in National Donor Day, February 10th, 2001, and join the National Marrow Donor Program. All right. We are in work session. Representative Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, I move H.J.R. 24 through the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Devlin moves H.J.R. 24 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? All right. Clerk, call the roll, please.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Gardner?
He's excused.
Yes. Representative Berard?
Aye.
Representative March?
Aye.
Representative Barr?
Excuse me.
Representative Richards?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Chair Wilson?
Both aye. And motion carries, and Representative Marsh, would you be the carrier, please? Thank you. That will close the work session on HJR 24, and we will open a work session to do a bill introduction. And once again, I remind the members of the committee that your vote to introduce this does not signify in any way your assent or desire that the bill not pass. We are simply voting to adopt this as a committee bill. And this bill happens to be the rent justification bill coming from Senator Metzger. So we take a motion on that?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
I don't have the draft in front of me, but Mr. Chairman, the bill that you have indicated in LC 1652, I hereby move to be introduced as a committee bill.
Thank you. Representative Devlin moves the bill known as LC 1652 into introduction as a committee bill. Do we have any discussion? Any objection? Okay. Motion carries. We'll now open a public hearing on House Bill 2436. And as you note the description of the bill, it exempts from disclosure under public records law audio recording of caller 911 emergency center and creates exception. Representative Marsh, please. Thank you. If you would once again introduce yourself for the record and explain to us the purpose of the bill.
Thank you, Chair Wilson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Steve March, and I represent House District 15 in Portland. I appreciate your consideration of House Bill 2436 relating to exemption from disclosure of audio recordings to 911 emergency service centers. Constituents brought this matter to our attention while I was working in Multnomah County Commissioner Lisa Nato's office. This occurred after a plea for help to 911 was replayed multiple times after a family tragedy. Senator Peter Courtney graciously agreed to have the current version of House Bill 2436 drafted. In days past, when you had an emergency, you would call a friend, a neighbor, or a family member for help. Today, we have all been taught to call 911 as that helpful neighbor if we have an emergency. Currently, nothing prohibits those calls for help from being played over and over again on the news, causing families to relive their tragedies. We want to protect the privacy of callers to 911 and their families by asking that the media get the callers or their legal representatives' consent before the use of the audio portion of their call to 911. We have tried also to take into consideration the media's other role with 911 calls. The media can and often does provide a public service by allowing the public to assess the quality of work being done by emergency dispatch services. Working with Senator Courtney, Representative Bill Witt, and representatives of the media, we have proposed amendments to address some of their concerns. The proposed amendments clearly allow for obtaining of a transcript of that audio recording, and if a requester shows by clear and convincing evidence that disclosure would not constitute a clear and unreasonable invasion of the caller's privacy, audio recordings could then be made still be obtained. These amendments establish privacy protections for families, while at the same time allows the media to retain their role in public information. I want to thank you for your consideration of this bill, and I've provided you with the -3 amendments that address this issue.
Thank you. Do we have any questions? Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative March, you say without the caller's consent, how do you envision that working? Is it with an oral consent or a written consent? Or
it could come in either form. Occasionally, 911 dispatch will call a caller and say, we've gotten a request for your tape. And it, if it's under investigation, it usually isn't released, but if a caller consents, and they could tell 911 over to release it. So that would be one way. Normally, probably other than that, I would imagine a written consent form would be the standard.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Witt, would you care to join Representative March here?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
If I can, Mr. Chairman, if I can just add some brief testimony. Representative March was working on this issue separate of me, and we both ended up having bills drafted and both filed two separate bills with the clerk. My bill was House Bill 2487, which interestingly got referred to Judiciary. So this bill, of course, came here. Representative March and I got together 3-4 weeks ago and started talking about how we could work together on this overriding issue of public disclosure and 911 calls. We've had a number of meetings on it, and together we worked on the information which led to the draft 3 amendments along with Senator Courtney. And as Representative March indicated, we talked with a number of representatives from both the print media and the electronic media in terms of trying to balance these interests. And I think if you look at this bill, you recognize that there is an interest in protecting callers and their privacy, particularly those who are in crisis situations involving their family, who are calling 911 because they have been properly trained and instructed that if there's an emergency, that's where you go. There's also an interest on the other part in terms of the public and the public's right to know and be informed, particularly through the media. So the draft 3 amendments, I think, recognize the fact that there's a certain balancing of interests that need to be brought to bear here. And if you look at the draft 3 amendments, you see that the audio recording will be released if, A, there is consent, and I would think consent primarily, to answer Representative Gardner's question, would come from the 911 agency calling the caller to get consent. I don't envision 10 people from the media running to the caller and saying, will you give us consent? I think 911 would call them, so we've had a request to release your audio recording. Is it okay if we release it? And if they say yes, fine, that issue is resolved. If the caller says no, I don't want the recording released because it's a personal nature, involves a family emergency, then there's another standard built into the bill, and that is a compelling public interest. If those requesting the release can show some compelling public interest as to why it's in the public interest to release the recording, well, then the recording would be released. That would require some kind of a hearing. Failing those two thresholds, upon request, a written transcript will be provided. So it's not like any information is being hidden, because a written transcript will be provided, which is a lot less invasive than someone having their voice actually played on the 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock news in a state of great distress relative to some emergency. And it might be some emergency of a very personal or private nature. So what we're trying to do here is we're trying to find some way in which we can fairly balance the interest of the caller in terms of their own personal privacy, as well as the public's interest and the media's interest, I think, in terms of serving the public, our relative disclosure of the information. And I think this bill represents a sound compromise in that regard. And there are some things that appropriately are not played in public. And I would think that some 911 calls fit that description. I don't think either Representative March and I are interested in a wholesale assault upon our public disclosure laws. We're picking out a very specific instance, a very specific concern, where people have come to us and have told us their concern with this. And we have through the Dash 3 amendments in particular, we've tried to respond to those who were concerned about any increasing erosion of our public disclosure laws by putting a certain balance into this that protects all those interests. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly, thank you. Any questions? Representative Devlin, then Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Either Representative Witt or Representative March, and perhaps Mr. Chamoff if he's to testify later, nothing in this bill would preclude the disclosure of the actual recording to a defense attorney in a criminal case or in a civil case to the defense or plaintiff's attorney.
That's
correct?
That, Mr. Chairman, Representative Devlin, that is absolutely correct. I mean, this would still be subject to any kind of legal subpoena or the request for the recording for a legal proceeding.
Thank you.
Representative Barad.
Again, either Representative Witt or Representative March could respond to this. If I'm the media, how do I know what's a crisis?
I think the question is whether the call for help is private or not. That's you're going to have an understanding because you can hear dispatch, for example, when dispatch calls the police or fire, you're going to have a sense of whether there is a crisis involved, whether there's life at stake, whether there's a threat of harm, or something along those lines, in that there was some action taken. So we're saying that plea for help is the protected speech here. I don't think we necessarily need to get into a definition of crisis. It's not part of the bill.
Follow up.
My question here is that I could see every member of the media having to feel that they have to seek the approval of the individual involved before doing a story on anything that might deal with something. I mean, a dog falling in a swimming pool could be considered very personal. What's going to differentiate from the media standpoint? Where they have to get approval? Or, in other words, who's going to make that decision? You can't have that recording.
Mr. Chairman, if I can respond. Representative Garrard, I think the bill clearly on its face says that if someone wants to get a copy of the audio recording, they need to have consent, or they need to show the compelling public interest, or in the alternative, they can at any time request the written transcript, and there's no need for consent or compelling public interest. So the media decision that they want to get either the recording or the transcript is the media's choice, the media's option. If they decide they want the recording, then they need to either get consent or show compelling public interest. They can always get the transcript. But the question is to if the media thinks it's newsworthy or not and wants it, that's a decision for the news media to make, and it's a matter of achieving the threshold for the recording or simply requesting the transcript.
One more follow-up,
Mr. Follow-up.
Is there anything to prohibit someone who has this recording, who was involved, from charging the media a fee for consent?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garrard, you mean in a situation where the person who made the call recorded the call?
No, where the person who made the call now has that call withheld from the media.
Mm-hmm.
The media calls, and that party says, for a certain fee, I will consent to your using it. If the consent is given to one media, does that open it up for all media?
There's two questions there, Bill. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Garrard, I think I understand your question now, because presumably the person who made the call doesn't have the recording. So the only person who has the recording, presumably, is the 911 agency. So you're saying, can the person who made the call say, I'll consent to release it to you if you pay me so much money?
Right.
Something, frankly, I hadn't contemplated. However, I would point out that once somebody has the recording and plays it, then it becomes a matter of anybody can record it and play it. So if I told the Channel 8 in Portland, you give me $1,000, I'll consent and let you have the recording. Once Channel 8 played it, anybody could play it. They could pick it up off the tape, presumably.
Off the airways.
But I hadn't thought about that, and that's something that might be worth discussion. Maybe Representative March has some additional thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, we hadn't really contemplated that, but I think in that case, I mean, you're suggesting that the person is making the statement that they're willing to give their consent. I, you could probably, at that point, make a case there is a public compelling interest. I mean, if you went and laid those facts out before the district attorney and said, you know, they're just trying to hold this up for money, it's in the public interest to have this information out there, I think you'd make a very good case at that point.
Thank you. Let me ask a question. Who does the audio recording actually belong to?
The tape itself is part of the 911 center.
So it is owned by something known as the 911 center?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think that's a specific entity that's in different counties. Now, in Washington County, it's Washington County Community, Washington County. Well, actually, Mr. Hatch from Washington County is going to be here, but it's, you know, it's a specific entity that has responsibility for 911 in Washington County. It's the Washington County Consolidated Communications Agency.
Okay. If immediate interest were to attempt to prove that there was indeed a clear and convincing need for this to be broadcast, who would they be making their appeal to, and in what forum?
They're currently in cases of contested 911 release tapes, and there have been some cases where a case, for example, might be under investigation, and the 911 center can withhold that. But the media still may wish to get that. They can either go to the district attorney asking for public records for to be released under public records, or they could go to a judge and ask for it to be released through that process.
Okay, thank you. Further questions, Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick question. Under the Dash 3 amendments, you're saying anyone can obtain a transcript of it.
That's right.
Just one follow-up, Mr. Chair. Who does the transcribing, and is that readily available in the current process of things, or would someone actually have to go through the tape and create a transcript?
It's my understanding that often transcripts are created, but I will leave the technical aspect to the fellow from 911 in Washington County. You can probably answer that better than I can.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Gardner, I think it's important to remember here that the percentage of cases where there's going to be a request for the recording or a transcript is quite small in terms of the total number of cases. And we can ask Mr. Hatch from Washington County that, but I suspect it's well below 1%. So even if, and it might vary now from county to county or entity to entity if they're preparing transcripts or not, but I think the cost of preparing the transcript would be relatively minimal when you look at the total number of requests that are likely to come in, which would be a very small number of the total number of recordings.
Thank you. Any further questions? All right, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This time I would like to call up Larry Hatch from Washington County 911. Perhaps we can begin to build some information here that we will want to really run by the media here. They're going to be here testifying in just a moment, and looking forward to that. In the meantime, Mr. Hatch, welcome, and if you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
My name's Larry Hatch, and when I'm on duty, I'm the Assistant Director for the Washington County 911 Center.
Thank you. As we begin to talk about this, I wanted to run this question by you, and that is, from your experience, who actually owns a 911 tape when it's made, when it's received and archived?
It's owned by the 911 Center, and there are specific rules that we have to live by through the State Archives Office on retention and how long that has to be.
Okay, thank you. Could you also tell me what the process is right now relating to the broadcast of 911 tapes? When media calls and wants to hear it, how do you comply with that? Or does this come from you? Do you automatically make recordings available? What is the process now?
Depending on the case, if I got a request from anyone, media or otherwise, and if it was a case that I thought might be under investigation by a police or fire department, initially I would call them, that agency, and see if it was under investigation, because as under the rules as they are today, if it is under investigation, it's not, the tape cannot be released. So if I got that agency's approval, I would make a copy of the, have a copy of the tape made on a cassette and release it.
Now, do you release that to one central distributing point, or would you send that cassette to every television station or interested radio station that might be on a call tree or something like that?
Generally, what happens, depending on the perceived magnitude of the call, we would get one or two requests, and then once it's hit air on one station, then we'll get requests from others. So I've been in the business for 14 years now and can generally tell how many copies I'm going to need to make ahead of time.
So as a general rule, you provide cassettes then to the different media outlets?
Yes.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Okay, hold on here for a moment. Thank you. Representative March has a question for you.
Thank you. How would the bill affect requests from the media that you currently get?
I think it would just add one more step, and that would be checking with the citizen who called 911 to see if they wanted to have their call released. With the amendments, we don't generally make transcripts now because we're giving a copy of the tape. It might add just a little more time on, you know, however long it would take, depending on the length of the call. Most 911 calls are probably a minute, minute and a half to get somebody to sit down and make a copy of that. But, you know, to focus just on the media, that's just one aspect on it. We get requests from citizens all the time wanting to know who reported them for whatever the police arrived on their doorstep for. When I get calls from those citizens wanting to know who was that called about whatever, you can tell the reason in their voice isn't because they want to send a thank you card to that person. They want to go and have a conversation with them, and I don't feel it's appropriate, that let the police officers be the mediator and not have to get involved in maybe another criminal behavior.
Thank you.
Thank you for the questions. All right, thanks very much. And if you would stay close, we may need you back. Thank you. I'd like to move to the media now, and I'd like to have Dave Biscom from I've got you here as OAB, but I know that's not correct, Dave.
It is for this purpose, Mr. Chair.
It is for today. And also Bill Johnstone, if you would come up, and I think that, yes, and I think that you have some guests that in time you would like to bring forward.
Yes. I do, Mr. Chair. For the record, I am Dave Fiskum, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Association of Broadcasters. With me are several four TV news directors, as well as the executive for our association, and in due course, they can introduce themselves to you, representatives of KGW, KOIN, KPTV, and KPDX. They have traveled here from Portland today to appear before you, and so we'll get them up here with Mr. Chair, your indulgence, very soon. Just wanted to make record of the fact that the OAB is an association with nearly 200 members, radio and television stations throughout the state, which are committed to working with you on a variety of public policy issues this session. This afternoon, we are here to express our opposition to House Bill 2436 because we do not believe it is necessary to add this element to an already substantial and growing list of exemptions to Oregon's public records law. If you and I were to count the bills introduced this session that would abridge the public records law, we could probably get past 20. Not all of them have the same interest level that this one does, but there are a number of such proposals that we're monitoring along with our friends from the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association in the building this time. I would like to express my appreciation to Representatives March and Witt, as well as to Senator Courtney, who have reached out to us and other organizations to see if there is middle ground that would allow House Bill 2436 or some other vehicle to move forward as a consensus product. We just saw the Dash 3 amendments at the start of this hearing, so we're not prepared to endorse them, though I would say to you I'm not surprised by their content. It is among those things we talked about, but I indicated at the time of the conversation that could not endorse that kind of approach without the consent of those who are here today. And as I say, the best use of your time may be to hear from the news directors and Mr. Johnstone, who have come a ways to talk to you. And then, with your indulgence, Mr. Chair, I would prefer to turn to them, and we'll be pleased to make some comments to you as well as answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Bill Johnstone, President and CEO of the Oregon Association of Broadcasters. Mr. Chair and committee members, you face a difficult balancing test right now before this committee with the various Oregon public records law issues that are before you, test between the public right to know and, of course, the privacy of the individual. Our view is that you should leave the judgment of how and when to use a 911 tape to the hands of the broadcast and print journalists. This is a best approach from the standpoint of preserving the public's right to know. We also think that you and we have a stake in preserving the accountability of the public agencies involved in providing emergency responses. Right now, I would tell you that the OAB, Oregon Association of Broadcasters, opposes House Bill 2436. We feel that right now, through the broadcast and print media, the review of the work that is done by the police is somewhat at stake, and we feel that we have the ability to do that through the access to these 911 tapes. I would at this time like to invite, with your permission, the representatives from the television stations that are their news directors that are invited today, and ask them to give you their input.
Okay.
Gentlemen, good to have you. Would identify yourself, please.
Hi, I'm Rick Howard. I'm the news director at KOIN Television.
John Sears, news director at KPTV.
Dan Ackland, news director at KPDX.
Rod Grammer, news director at KGW.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, things just starting off here. I think you were able to hear the statement of the proponents at the beginning of our session. Much of this revolves around placing yourself in the position of if you or a family member were to make a panicked call to 911, would you want your voice replayed for potentially millions of people? I guess another, now there are a number of ancillary issues to that, but over the years, I presume that 911 tapes were not often broadcast, and then suddenly we were beginning to hear them broadcast. And another, I guess, the thing I would like you to address for us today is from a journalistic standpoint, would you give us your position on the value of playing tapes like that for your audience? I'd like to hear your viewpoint on that as we begin. But I know you have lots of other things, and I don't want to dominate your agenda. So if you would just bear those questions in mind as we move along, I'd appreciate it. And I'll let you all decide who would go first.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the panel. I've been in this market since 1983. I've worked at now all the television stations here. And I can tell you in those years, and I remember the first time I used a 911 tape specifically was 1989, that I have never received one complaint. I've never been part of any civil suit or suit from any at any degree. So it surprises me, one, that we're here discussing this now. And the proponents still have not identified to me exactly an instance of there being a problem. And over the 18 years, I'd kind of like to give you a brief summary of how the system works as it's in place today. I think that's very important. When we request 911 tapes, they just don't call us up and send them, you know, over to us the next day or the same day. It often can be 2, 3, 4 weeks before the system works. And the system, one, takes into concern what the investigation is. Is there a criminal investigation? And if there is, we of course will not get those tapes until that has been resolved. Is there any other reason going on that might delay that tape?
And to give you a very good example of our looking at tapes and evaluating them on a one-on-one basis is a fire that happened here in Salem within the last 2 months, a very sad instance where a woman in a mobile home was killed in a fire. In those 911 tapes, there is very graphic description of her struggle to survive, which she was not successful at. We decided that that was not something we could air. And I would think that would be the exact instance that these gentlemen are talking about. We, as news directors, use our judgment and our experience to handle it as it now exists. I think, as they also admitted, there's very few cases where we actually want the tapes from the standpoint of somebody using, like a loved one, as the example used, Mr. Chairman. More importantly, we use those tapes to watch or look over, watchdog, if you will, the 911 system itself, how the police act. For instance, New Year's Eve, we just had an incident in Portland where the 911 tapes were important as we evaluated how the Portland police responded to those instances. If, in fact, there are one or two cases, does that, in fact, mean we should cover all 911 tapes for this, as they admitted, very few cases? So I think that, one, is the system set up now? We police ourselves, that the system works as it's established, and this is one more layer that will only prevent us from doing our job of being watchdogs.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, John Sears again, our news director at KPTV in Fort Lauderdale. I really don't want to brag, but I've been here a bit longer than Rick. Not that I'm the oldest member of this group, but I've been here for longer than 20 years, and I've never received a complaint. And sitting in my chair every morning, I know now with the oncome of email, I hear complaints quickly. Sometimes I don't get out of the office, and I hear complaints from viewers, from people that our reporters and our photographers meet out in the community. I've never heard a complaint once in my years. I consider this piece of legislation, and I don't mean to be frivolous about this, but I consider this piece of legislation, especially in light of what Representative Witt indicated was about 1%. I don't know if that's probably, that may very well be accurate. I don't know. But I consider this piece of legislation, this proposed legislation, a cluster bomb approach to a concern when simply a pellet gun approach would do. I consider it to be an overreach on the part of a group of folks who really don't understand how meticulous we are in our approaches toward making editorial decisions. The editorial decisions we make clearly there can be mistakes in the editorial decisions we make. I think all of us up here would admit to that. However, when there are cases in which there are concerns raised about the rights to privacy, as a case in which Rick mentioned just a moment ago, there's no one that's going to leap on that. I think the record pretty much is clear about that. I think over the in trying to respond to your first question, Mr. Chair, I think over the years, it's pretty much common knowledge that 911 tapes are broadcast across the country in larger markets than ours and smaller markets than ours, and my family and I have had this conversation. In fact, that if there is a call, we know that it is a public document. We consider it a public document. I think the concern I have, there are several concerns, and I'm sure we'll get to some of those, but I do have some other concerns. One about the decision-making process, the continued erosion of public records laws. In response to your question of prior question, who owns the tapes? I believe the public owns those tapes. It is 911 agencies are publicly funded. I believe the public owns those tapes. That no agency owns those tapes. I have concerns if, as we monitor these tapes, I have concerns that if a viewer or if a 911 caller makes a telephone call and has reports something, police action whether there's a crime going on. I believe that if there are, I guess it's a trust issue too here, where if 911 operators, because of fatigue, because of excessive overtime, if the 911 operators make mistakes, if the 911 operator makes that call to that person, we know, and you all know too, how do you phrase the question to get permission? So I would have concerns about that. I think there's some really valid concerns, some prior restraint issues there that cause us great anxiety.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Dan Ackland again, KPDX. I have very little to add other than to basically agree with the previous statements. I just am very concerned about a continuing erosion of some of our rights to access public information. I think we do play a valid role in watching what's going on and how the operation transpires. Recently, there was a terrible accident on Highway 26 where a car was going the wrong way and crashed into a woman. And there were questions about how well the Sheriff's Department had handled this and whether they perhaps had caused it. The 911 tapes seem to vindicate their side, that they really hadn't even been involved long enough to have had an influence at all. So I think that there are many valuable uses to them, and I'm concerned that we would have to jump through yet another hoop to possibly find some problems or the fact that there weren't problems.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Rod Grammer, News Director at KGW. My colleagues have made most of the points, but maybe I can just reiterate a couple of them and try to address your question as well. I think there are four good reasons to oppose this legislation. First of all, speaking to the journalistic reasons, there was a question about how quickly the police responded to the rioters, to the calls on New Year's Eve in downtown Portland. The release of those tapes showed that the police had responded in a quick way. Same was the issue on the Highway 26 incident that my colleague referred to. If the 911 tapes had not been released to the public in both those instances, the debate would probably still be raging as to whether law enforcement responded in a timely fashion to those two cases. As it turned out, because the tapes were released, it showed the police did respond in a timely fashion. So I think there's a journalistic and a public interest point to be made in disclosure. Secondly, the media polices itself in this matter. Rick mentioned the case in Salem where this woman was in the mobile home. We at Channel 8 had access to those tapes. We chose not to air them because there was no public benefit. There was no reason to put those tapes on the air. Thirdly, it seems to me that this legislation is a bill that will make many lawyers rich. Because there are several instances each month, certainly each year, where we seek 911 tapes. If we have to go to the courts to argue every time we want 911 tapes, which we will, it'll keep our lawyers busy, it'll keep the district attorney's office busy, and it'll keep the judicial system busy. It seems to me they probably have better ways to spend their time. And fourthly, I think that the provision that allows for a transcript of the 911 call and not the tapes is may make our friends in the newspaper publishing business very happy, but I think it's not fair to the broadcasters because they can use transcripts. We actually need the tapes ourselves. So in my opinion, those are the four reasons why this bill should be opposed. Thank you.
Thank you. We have questions. Representative Doyle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Howard, I guess I'm kind of curious on your comment about being a watchdog of the police agencies. I'm not sure, just from some of the other testimony, whether you folks actually obtain all 911 calls or, you know, what is it, you know, that it's a threshold for you to make a determination that you need a tape, and then how does that, I guess, resolve with the idea that, you know, you're the watchdog of the police agencies?
If I could, Mr. Chair and Representative Doyle, a couple of thoughts there. One is that we monitor 911 calls all day long, you know, the live broadcast of them. We are constantly, one, looking for news as well as evaluating what's going on in the city. So those are things that we live with on a daily basis as part of our system. When we look at how the police agencies respond to specific instances, much like the New Year's Eve riots in Portland, we have to look at the big picture. We can't make assumptions without all the information. And it's important in this case, and as Rod Grammer said, it was clear after seeing the 911 tapes that the Portland Police Department had responded both in a timely and as well as as far as the size of the effort they threw at those riots, they had done their job. We wouldn't have had that information if we hadn't had 911 tapes. And from the other side, if there had been a delay, if there had not been the urgency that they showed, well, then that would have been a news story. That would have been something that the people of Portland would need to know. It would also hold the police department accountable for those actions. Does that answer that?
Yeah, if I can follow up. In the way the legislation's drafted, or proposed legislation, is that if in a case like the New Year's Eve riots, how would you anticipate somebody not giving consent to disclosing a 911 call on a case like that?
Well, as I read it, we'd have to get permission from the police themselves. And if we're trying to investigate, I mean, it's like policing yourself. If they've done something wrong, you don't think they may drag their feet in releasing those to us? It's a possibility. It's clearly a chilling effect as far as, you know, the ability to get access to that. And in that same vein, you know, what we forget about, too, when we look at this legislation is the size of the problem it creates for 911. Now, and I'm sure you can ask the gentleman from Washington County, but when Representative Witt, I believe, said that some 911 person could call the caller and get permission, it's absolutely ridiculous. These people are so busy, they can barely pick up the phone when we're calling them in an emergency. And to expect them, and you can look at today's Oregonian, the case of overtime and the workload they have, I mean, it is absolutely insane to believe those people could have the time and call every person we may want to talk to get their permission to use those tapes.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I can ask that question as well. The question of trying to go to the source of the information to get permission, and I don't say this to criticize any specific police agency or 911 center, but that's why we have oversight, but legislative oversight and other oversight. But let's say the 911, let's say the New Year's Eve riots occurred, and let's say there was a mistake made by 911, or let's say there was a mistake made by the police department. Those are the very same people that this legislation says will go seek permission for the release of those tapes. If there was a problem, if there was a mistake made that night, this legislation is basically asking the fox to sort of keep track of the hen house there. And I don't think that that's probably what we want as a society, to have the police agencies sort of deciding if they're going to go ask the people, and how do we know they ask the people? I think there's a problem there.
I'll just add one other thing. In the case of the riots, how many calls were made? And how many would permission have to be granted by each one of those callers? Plus, do you really know who makes the call from the cell phone? I mean, all these factors come into play when I think there might be a very compelling reason to have that recording.
Thank you for the questions. All right. Representative March.
Thank you. You mentioned the incident on Highway 26, and that was calls between a moving police officer in an automobile, as I understand it, and dispatch. That's not a call to 911 incoming call. That's calls that are already on the public airwaves, so this bill would have no effect on that. This is not designed to affect information that's already going out across the airwaves. As Mr. Howard said, you monitor 911 calls, which is not factually what you do. You monitor the radio dispatch from 911 to either fire, police, ambulance, or whatever. So there's those calls are already public information.
Well, we would not have heard the broadcast that went to 911. We would have only heard what 911 did in response to that call.
This legislation, and we will have to take a look at that particular aspect, but it is not designed to affect communication between public agencies. It's only designed to protect individuals calling into 911. And if it's faulty in that, we will look at that with counsel and make sure that that is not the problem. But we have always intended communication between public agencies to be public information. And
Representative March, I'm curious what generates this concern. Having never received a complaint in the 20 years that I've been here, is there a specific? I wish I could respond.
Well, we have some folks that will give testimony in a bit, and yes, there have been instances, and they'll talk about it. And I have additional testimony that I will provide. So.
Thank you, Representative March. Further questions? All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. Next up, I would like to have Ingrid Swinson, Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, and Kathy Osborne, Juvenile Rights Project. You two would come up together, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. We appreciate the opportunity to raise a concern. And I apologize to Representative March because I have only just informed him of this concern. I appreciated Representative Devlin's discussion of access to these tapes by the defense bar in both juvenile and criminal cases. We have a concern because we do believe that if this legislation were to pass, we could still get access to these tapes because we could certainly subpoena them as part of the criminal case or the juvenile case. However, there's a process in place now which works much better for all concerned. That allows us to simply review the log at the emergency center and order those tapes and receive them as soon as possible. Our investigations, as you can imagine, sometimes occur immediately after we're appointed or retained in a case. And if we were to have to use a subpoena process to obtain those, it would be a considerable inconvenience. I think it would also be a considerable expense because we'd have to serve these. There could be a hearing on whether or not we were entitled to them, and that's a process that we don't believe needs to be in place. I don't think there have been instances in which defense counsel have misused these tapes. We obtain them solely for our own purpose in connection with the investigation. We do need the actual tape rather than a transcript because the sound of the voices, the background noise, all of those things are relevant for purposes of defending a case. So we would like to interpose a minor amendment here, which adds us to the list of people who are not prevented from obtaining these tapes. And I should have proposed the same amendment on page 8, section 30.
Very good. Thank you. Ms.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathy Osborne from Juvenile Rights Project. We are in support of the amendment offered by the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. And just in terms of the timelines, I would let the committee know that in juvenile court, we need to adjudicate a delinquency matter within 28 days of the petition being filed or 56 days if the youth is not being held in detention. So because the fast timeline in juvenile court, it would make it almost impossible for us to subpoena these records and get them timely. And so that's certainly our concern.
Thank you. Any questions?
I just have a clarification, please, Mr. Chairman. Did you say something about page 8?
Mr. Chair, Representative Verger, yes, on page 8, I neglected in my little hand engrossed draft here to make the same amendment in section 30 on page 8 that I proposed on page 5.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
Certainly. Any further questions?
We'll note those.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very much. Next up, Barbara Rommel. And Barbara, I hope I'm pronouncing your last name correctly. Mary Ann Schwab, please. Thank you. If you would individually identify yourself.
Yes, I'm Barbara Rommel. Excuse me. I live at 4317 Southeast Pine, Portland, Oregon. I have been asked to read into your testimony a fax that Representative March received from Linda Carol McKinley. Quote, whenever I'm watching a news broadcast or listening to a news broadcast, I don't need the taped 1-1 call to back up the report. I think our newscasters are perfectly capable of stating what happened without all the sensationalism of the taped call. I can only imagine how the people involved in the situation feel after hearing their most personal, frantic moments aired for all the world to hear. I think it's a violation of privacy. Censorship has nothing to do with it. Censorship would only come into play if the information were not to be made available. As a viewer or listener of the news, it's enough for me for a broadcaster to say 911 was called by Joe Smith, etc., to report blank, and so was the result. Good grief, we didn't need the Inquirer or any other tabloid news hyping up a person's fear or grief. Signed by Linda Carol McKinley of Southeast Portland. For myself, in listening to the group of broadcasters just before me, I would like to point out to them that as to why there have not been any objections, or so few objections, if any, in the last few years of 911 tapes being called. I think that if you would look at the statistics in the last 3 to 5 years, there's an increasing, a tremendously increasing use, maybe not by all the stations, whether they be radio or television stations across the state, in using 911 audio tapes. In the metropolitan Portland area, that has changed drastically in recent years. We are hearing more and more of those used not only on the news, but one thing that I object to as teasers for future to come broadcasts, newscasts, regardless of which form of media it is. All news stations, whether they be television or radio, do not always use the same number of tapes. Some of the others do. It is an unbalanced presentation by some parts of our market. Inasmuch as the media currently does have access to all information included on an audio tape, I do not feel that they need to be concerned about the process. I think what has been started is dialogue, as the change when you had your conference committee is a step in the right direction, because 911 calls are important disclosure information which needs to be available. But the right of privacy of individuals, not government entities, et cetera, is currently the reason for coming to the legislature with an amendment to the existing laws. Individuals' rights are being impacted. It may not be a huge number, but those who are impacted, it is like a ripple in the community. And we do not wish to see that continue, because the media changes constantly. We watch that every day of our lives on how they do the coverage. And how often do we turn on the news in a given day and see the same thing rehashed 3 times, 4 times, depending on how much courage you have to watch that many newscasts in your market? That's from me. Thank you.
Schwab, please.
Before I read my letter into the testimony, I would like to address the 4 points made by the media here. We heard the New Year's Eve incident. We heard the tragic Highway 20 incident, where you had the bands where the patrol cars were talking with their dispatchers. We've heard that the media polices itself regarding the house fire, the tragic death that occurred here in Salem. We've heard how rich the attorneys are going to get. Now, you notice the two parties are the media and the attorneys. The private individual that has been crushed and painfully hurt by the broadcast of their voices on the media are so encumbered with funeral expenses, how can they go out
and hire an attorney to block this. Provisions written in the transcript for the newspaper, they also have it for their media. We don't need to be someone's entertainment at the 6 o'clock news. Depending on the personalities involved in individual private homes, where are you going to find an unbiased jury? You've got domestic violence out there. We have protective housing out there with foster care. We've had babies die in foster care with SIDS, and before they can even notify the parents, the TV cameras are in the front yard. Oh, the owners will not talk to us on camera. Like, duh, get a brain. It is common sense. We have crossed the line of decency, and it's got to be stopped. I feel that until society says enough is enough, the most precious unit of measure we have is your household. Whether it's you, your wife, your children, grandma, grandpa down the street, two fellows in a house, new immigrants down the street, every house is sacred. We're talking private homes here. Trauma is trauma, and that's the reason for this. Now, I would like to let you know what put the fire under me. It happened in February of 1999. I sat at my living room table reading the Oregonian newspaper with my radio turned on to the KXL News. I heard a young woman's traumatized voice begging the 911 dispatcher for instructions to stop the boy's bleeding. A young boy riding his bicycle home when a neighbor's dog broke loose out of the fenced backyard, knocking the lad to the ground. The incident took place on Tuesday. The boy never regained consciousness and died in a Portland hospital on Thursday with his parents at his bedside. This incident took place in Marion County. It's the other reason for this bill. We need to make it uniform across the state with all counties. I'm very happy that Washington County is here to answer some of your questions today. I immediately telephoned the KXL news editor and asked whether or not KXL was an affiliate with KOIN-TV. His response, KXL and Coin TV were loosely linked in that we did share audio tapes, but we're not joined at the hip. Why do you ask? I said, sir, let me frame my question this way. Are you a parent? He answered, yes. I asked, heaven forbid, have you ever had to bury one of your children? After a notable pause, his response was hardly audible. No. Now, put yourself in either of those two households this morning as they prepare to attend the little boy's funeral. Put yourself in the community as they try to console two families. Broadcasting the babysitter's frantic 911 call as a space filler is like adding salt to an open wound. It is heartless. Think of those who are grieving the tragic death of this child. I begged him, please pull this space filler off the airwaves. He did. That KXL newsletter was not only a gentleman with the highest ethics and integrity, but also very courageous. He did, in fact, pull that heart-wrenching 911 airspace filler off the airwaves. I want this committee to know that my letters to the television and radio stations regarding this gross breach of public trust were never acknowledged, not even as much as a generic form letter. The apparent lack of compassion on the part of the media and their misinterpretation of the Federal Open Information Act appall me. I believe that the broadcasting of 911 calls is a blatant violation of privacy, as protected by the Fourth Amendment, which does in fact override the First Amendment, a point overlooked by the media under the cloak of censorship. Again, the media is betraying the public's trust when the media does not report the true facts regarding their having access to the written text of all 911 calls. There is no potential government agency cover-up. The 911 audio tape is readily available to the police investigators, fire marshals, and district attorneys in the communities they serve. These 911 audio tapes should not be readily available to make a private citizen's tragic grief public on the evening news. Is the time for society to say enough is enough is now, and with the help of these bills. The public right to know is not compromised in House Bill 2436 and in House Bill 2487. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for our panelists? Representative Martin.
Thank you both for coming. I really appreciate your interest, and that's, you know, when you brought this matter to us, it was you know, kind of a heart-wrenching story. But Marianne, specifically, you mentioned writing to the media, television stations, I believe you mentioned. Did you write to Channel, to COIN, K-O-I-N?
I did, and I wrote to KXL. In fact, I have a copy of KXL's letter here, and in my busyness, I did not pick up COINs, but neither station responded to my comment.
Okay, so from earlier testimony, I presume that within stations there's maybe a lack of communication as far as letters going to the right people then. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You. And again, it's economic. What family paying for a funeral is going to go hire an attorney to challenge the media, who has more money than any of us could ever dream? They are in control. The people with the money are in control. And it's time that human decency has a higher priority than how much money you have in your bank account to fight this and bring everybody into compliance. Thank you.
Thank you both for your appearance today. Mary Botkin, please. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Mary Botkin. We represent literally thousands of 911 telecommunicators across the state of Oregon. And I'm going to be very brief. We just want an exemption for the union. It is our job to defend 911 operators when their dispatch issues are called into question. And we think that the level of evidence is a little high. Clear and convincing is a fairly high standard of evidence, and I think probably a preponderance is sufficient. You know, we have no interest in exposing people at their worst, and our folks get people at the worst possible times of their lives. You know, the ones who call to wish us a good day are just tying up the lines. You know, people just are not at their best when they're calling 911. And we just want to be able to continue to have access to 911 tapes when it's necessary and when the call is in question. And as the families find out, so do we find out that the media is usually questioning the response or the handling of a call on the 5 o'clock news or on the 6 o'clock news. And it can be traumatic both for the operator as well as for anybody who's involved in the call. So, as I said, you know, there are times when we just need access to the tapes as we defend operators. You know, I will remind everybody of the, you know, we all talk about the fire down in Salem that wasn't aired. Let me tell you about the fire in Portland that was aired, where an entire family was killed, and I think it was in Representative Gardner's district. And it was a Russian family, as I recall. And it was a mess. I mean, people could not find the house. They could see the house and couldn't get there. It was a mess. And that tape was aired a lot. And everybody was blaming everybody else. And so for the union, who had to represent the dispatchers, not to have access to the tape readily would have been difficult for us. And I don't need to say any more.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Questions? Thanks. Lisa Nato, please. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Lisa Nato, Multnomah County Commissioner. And I want to thank you for allowing me to say a few words, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I have sat in your shoes, and these are not easy questions to deal with. They certainly involve a balance, a balancing act between what is in the public domain and what should remain matters of privacy. And we have to make these decisions very carefully, it's true. We do err on the side of privacy in many arenas in public policy. We protect people's health records when they're working with our health department. when they receive alcohol and drug services, those are remain private. And when children are provided services through the state office or through our county services, those are also remain in the private domain. We respect individuals' rights to privacy. This bill and the amendment strikes a good balance between the public's right to know and public disclosure and the rights of privacy. And I support the bill and thank Representative March for bringing this forward. It allows for a transcript to be under any circumstances provided, and so anyone can look at the verbal message of what was happened. But it allows for the audio portion to remain private. And I think it just comes down to me is what I would want as an individual, knowing that I need to access a public system, 911, in an emergency. And that is the only system I can access, if or my children, from my home. And as a public figure, of course, I would suspect my voice, if there was a trauma, would be a matter then of the public domain and be aired. But more than that, I'm speaking really on behalf of my children. Were anything to happen and they were to call 911, their voice would be the trailer for the next evening's news. And that is not right, because we are providing a service by providing 911, and the service is to provide emergency services. We do not inform people beforehand that if you call 911, your voice may become a matter of public domain, or your children's voice, and your personal trauma and tragedy will become a matter of public record and concern. So I feel this strikes an appropriate balance under certain circumstances where it is appropriate, then the audio portion can be aired to see what was happening at that point in time. But it doesn't allow for the marketing of human tragedy in the public domain just because we as public servants are providing that service to the public. So I think this bill is a very good balance, and these are certainly difficult issues to grapple with. I'm a member of the legal profession. All our complaints are that people might file to the state bar. They are public, become public domain. So there are instances I definitely support and would err on the side of airing things as public. But in this instance, you have an individual's voice, and their personal private trauma should not become everybody's market.
Thank you. Representative Devlin.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is the controlling issue here to you the fact that it is through a public entity that this information is being released? Because I know there's a range here. There's clearly something that both of us would recognize would be something that shouldn't be disclosed or should be a private matter. And there's clearly things at the other end of the gamut where neither one of us would advocate any control. I'll give you an example. Occasionally, the news media, through videotape, actually sees someone being killed. Obviously, that probably causes a lot of heartache for the individual that knows that person or a family member. But I wouldn't advocate, and I don't believe you would advocate, that we should put any controls on the media for showing that. So where is the line that you're drawing? Is it because of the public involvement in this process?
As a government, we keep public records, and I think that is something that we hold, you know, very near and dear, that the public should act, that we shouldn't be keeping private records. And so there is a distinction between what the news media gets on their own, going out and filming, be it human tragedy, versus the responsibility we have as a public entity in our record keeping. And I make a distinction in my own mind a bit between public records that we go out and gather ourselves versus when an individual from the public wants our services, is forced to come to us. And, you know, we have similar issues with DMV and so forth. What do we keep private and so forth? But on this one, it's clearly we're still provided public record. It's still obtainable in any form under certain circumstances, but the voice is simply protected of the individual calling. So I do think there is a distinction that we are the ones controlling the information, and by law, that is a public matter. Thank you very much.
Further questions? All right. I would like to make an opportunity for anyone else to come back and testify. I've exhausted the list here, and if anyone else would like to come up, and even for a second time, that would be more than fine with me. Thank you.
Rick Howard with KOIN Television, Mr. Chair. Well, I'd like to respond in a couple of ways. first of all, the attempt to separate the public gathering of information. I mean, it's clear that in many cases the government collects information that the media has to gain access through, and it's a process that's important. And to separate now, when do we set the line? If I take pictures of her children in an act of that may cause her some pain, and yet they've done something wrong, should I then have to get permission to air that video because it's going to cause her some pain? And I think that it's clear that we set a precedent here that is very dangerous when we try to set guidelines about what we can choose and what the media can show and what we can deliver to the viewers, to our public. And I think it's a dangerous ground that when you consider these things, and it sets a precedent that is very dangerous. Thank you.
Thank you. Before you go, just a brief question, and that is that I have heard mentioned in testimony a couple of times today about portions of 911 tapes being used as trailers or promotional announcements for other news segments. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I have to speak from my experience because I don't know exactly what she's speaking or referring to, and oftentimes those generic descriptions don't deal with specific. But I've only been at KOIN for 3 weeks. But I've been in the market since 1983, and I've been in a position where I had to choose which 911 tapes we ran or didn't run. And I can tell you that we have never, in my experience, at my station, used a video or a 911 tape to drive you to our next newscast. If it's been part of a story or somebody else has done it, and I can't speak for KXL Radio or the example she used, she said that she heard it on KXL. She never said she heard it on KOIN. We could have gotten the tape, and they may have made some arrangement. I'm not familiar with this. I wasn't there. But oftentimes, we get those audio tapes so that we can make a decision about whether or not we should air those. And, with a transcript, oftentimes, you don't get the full impact of that news story or that investigation or that event that happened, clearly just from the impact of the voices or the action or the explosions or what you have. So, I mean, each case would have to be evaluated on its own basis, and that's what I try to do.
Obviously, those of us here on this committee have been watching TV for a very long time, and the question I would have is, we all watch TV before the airing of 911 tapes,
mm-hmm.
and I guess a question that I would have for you is the public better served today than it was years ago before the actual playing of those tapes?
I believe they are. I believe that the electronic levels that we've achieved today gives the public better access to the information they need. And I think that it's incumbent upon the people who are making those decisions to deal with that advance, to be right and take the high road.
All right, thank you. Anything further from the committee?
Just one.
Representative,
one clarification. In as much as we had testimony that a letter was sent to your station, and apparently you have not received it.
No.
Have you considered maybe are there other venues on how people get to you?
I can only speak again from my experience. Right. I have, and I've been in this market a long time, and I've had very tough questions asked of me. And I historically answer those questions. If you write me a letter, if she writes me a letter, I respond to it. I will, in KOIN's defense, say that there was no news director there in that period. They were in between the one who left and the hiring of myself. I'm pretty sure that
this took place in February of 1999.
I'm pretty sure. 2 years ago, I'm sorry, I thought it was last year. So I can't speak for that news director.
Okay.
But I can tell you, if she wrote me a letter, I'd respond to it.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative March, it's obvious that there's a way to go on this, but I would certainly hold this open if you would like to convene a work group with all involved parties here to see if you can move towards some kind of resolve on this or partial resolve. I'd be happy to hear back from you and make a decision accordingly about the issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2436. Any further discussion among the committee on this? I do want to mention there is no meeting on Wednesday, but we will have an important meeting on Friday. All right. Committee adjourned.
John.